All right, we're gonna write into Robin. Robin came from Ventura, Gold Coast area. Give it up for Robin, guys.
No hesitation.
I love you. No hesitation. You can't get nervous.
Thank you. My name's Robin. I'm an addict. My home group is the Tuesday night men's meeting of Narcotics Anonymous in Ventura, the Gold Coast area. I used and abused, jailed and bailed, all in Ventura. That was where I did most of my best work. Had a three-hour drive to get here, which was nice. Just nice to get out of Ventura. It's been crazy last week. We had a mass shooting. 12 people were killed right up the hill. The next day, we had a fire that started up in two different cities, and it's just going crazy. There's smoke everywhere. And all that stuff impacts you. You know, all that stuff really takes its toll on you. And there's no internet, there's no TV, there's no Wi-Fi. And for me, that's a big deal, you know. It's like culture shock. I like my TV time at night, and there's none of that. And getting up here, we had a little bit of service, and I could see all my friends are detoxing because they don't have Wi-Fi, and they can't go on social media and see what's happening out there. We can't even find out what the fire's doing because we don't have any TVs, any local stations to tell us what's going on. I come up here and more people know about what's going on in Ventura than we did when we were there. So it's just crazy. So it was nice to come up here. It's a nice three-hour drive. The traffic wasn't too bad. And it's nice to come up to an area where I'm getting to know a lot of people. Every year I try and go to, at least for the last 8-9 years or so, I like to go up to the Blues Fest, and I love it. I absolutely love it, hearing the speakers doing that whole thing, meeting new people, staying up there for a few days, and it's nice. And then a lot of the guys that are up in this area and around here come down to a men's retreat that we put on in Malibu. And we don't even know what's happening with our site right now. It could be burning down as far as we know, but you know, the fires are going, and we just hope for the best. And I found out a guy I know, he lost everything to the fire. All of his worldly belongings, his home. But he's all right, and I guess the rest of the family is too. I really don't know for sure, but it's nice to be up here, like I said. Let's see. Where should I start? I guess we're supposed to come up here and share our experience, strength, and hope. We're supposed to tell you what it was like. And for me, a lot of times coming up, this isn't my favorite thing to do. And I hear that there's three pitches that we have. The one we're going to say, the one we say, and then the one we wish we would have said. And that's usually the case, you know. 3 hours of driving up here, I'm thinking of all these wonderful things I'd like to tell you guys. And then I'm sure when I'm done, I'll think, God, I didn't say any of that stuff. I didn't say any of that. But it's all right. Heidi, thank you. You did a great job. I really appreciate it. I could relate to a lot of that. And as I get going, you'll hear how it relates to my story. How many people are here within their first year? Raise your hand, please. Fantastic. Fantastic. I hope you don't go back out and use again. We want you here. We need you here. We'd love to see you stay clean. But since you are here, if you decide to go back out, we have ruined it for you. Your using will never, ever be the same again. We have absolutely ruined it for you. You're going to be thinking about us. You're going to be thinking of the events. You're going to be thinking of the Blues Fest, the different meetings, the people that you meet, and you're going to run into them at the mall. You're going to run into them at the grocery store. You're going to see them in cars passing on the corner, and they're going to remind you that people stay clean and that you could have too. The only problem is not everybody makes it back. And I don't want to be the downer, but a lot of people die. And Heidi mentioned it already. I mean, it happens in all the areas, in all regions. If people go back out, that swinging door might not always be open for them, and they may not have the opportunity to come back. And I think we can probably, anybody that's stuck around for a while, can think of people that have passed since we've been clean to the disease of addiction. I'm going to share, I have two buddies. One that was in the program when I came in. I'm not one that stuck around from the very beginning. And this guy was in, he couldn't stick around either, but he was here for a while. And one of our good friends who had about 20 years decided to go back out and use, and he's been struggling to get back in. And that friend of mine that was here is back in, and pretty soon he's going to celebrate 2 years of recovery again. And it's really nice to have him in the room. And our one buddy that's been struggling, that had 20 years, he finally came to a meeting last week. And we said to him, my friend did, I wasn't there. He said, it's really good to see you here. I hope you come back to some more meetings. And he says, well, you know what, I'm really struggling. I'm really struggling. You hurt my feelings. I feel offended. You said some things about me while I was out there using, and I just really didn't like it and appreciate it, and I don't know if I can come back to any meetings where you're at. And my friend looked at him, and he said, I'm going to tell you three things. Go fuck yourself, get over it, and I hope you don't die. Excuse my language. But I like that. I really like the fact that he got real with him and told him how he felt about him not wanting to come to meetings because he was offended and he got his feelings hurt. You people that raised your hand the first year, hold on. We're going to hurt your feelings. We're going to say things that you don't like, but you can get over it and stay in these rooms. And hopefully maybe you'll stick around long enough to hurt somebody else's feelings. You know? Like I said, I'm not somebody that came in and stuck around. I didn't do a timer on this. How long am I supposed to go? Oh, don't do that to me. Don't do that. I'm not one that came in here and stuck around. I came in and I was in and out for like 3.5 years. And in that process, in that time, I spent 3 of it locked up. And I'd get 30 days and think I had this going on and I knew what was going on. And I'd go back to jail and then I'd get another 30 days and come back and I'd do a year and a half. And, you know, it was just that ongoing process. And I went through several recovery programs. I went through Tarzan. I went through Camarillo State Hospital. Now it's a university. And I remember being up in on the top floor, and it was a 30-day detox. And down below was where the family was. And there were these people walking around with dunce caps, sandwich signs. It was crazy, and they were walking, make them walk around a circle in the courtyard, and I thought to myself, if this is recovery, I don't want anything to do with this. I remember being in Tarzana, and it was supposed to be a 4-week program. And after the first week, I went up to the counselors and said, you know what? Thank you guys. This is a fantastic program. You have taught me so much in this first week. I think I'm just going to check out now and I'll apply all this stuff that you have taught me and I'm good. I'm golden. I can do this and I thank you for it. And I had a friend pick me up. Now Tarzana's in LA. Before we got back to the county line, Ventura County line, I was smack back, had my chin in my chest, and I couldn't do it. I still couldn't see it. I heard Heidi mention about religion, and I had the opportunity to go to the first men's convention in San Jose, Band of Brothers. Had a great time. And one of the speakers up there was talking about God and the struggles that he had when he first came in a higher power, whatever you want to call it. But he was referring to it as God. And he said, I've heard people talk about God in a way that works for them is they refer to God as a group of druggies. A group of druggies is what he said. And then others, people I've heard over the years, God could be the gift of desperation. And I like that. And I think people that come in here and really have the gift of desperation, that have reached that bottom, have got a chance at staying clean for a while. For me, I like the analogy of a good orderly direction, you know, doing the right thing for the right reason, keeping it simple, good orderly direction. We know what the right thing to do is, but a lot of times our crazy thinking takes us out the door and we're off and running with that first thought, which is usually wrong, and we end up using. So I really like to keep a simple program. I don't like to confuse things. I don't like to I prefer simple. And my wife is always razzing me about being too simple. I'm a pretty simple-minded guy. But after doing the programs, I remember going into one program and I did the same thing of going out early and went to jail, and I kept trying to get back in and they wouldn't let me in. So what I did was I pulled up every day, and I had this crappy car that I was living in. It didn't run very well. And I would pick up guys at this house and take them to meetings. Well, after doing this for a period of time, they asked me if I would manage one of the grad houses, and it was probably one of the best choices I made at that time, because I was sleeping in my car. I was sleeping in a little bitty Datsun B210 in Ventura. It's cold. It's small. Every day I had to stretch half the day. I'd lay out on rocks like a lizard just so I could warm up. And they asked me to manage one of the grad houses, and I did that for 3.5 years. And in that 3.5 years, it gave me an opportunity of taking care of some of the wreckage of the past. I went back to school. I started working in recovery, which wasn't my recovery. I was working in recovery. And one of my Eskimos, a man who's passed away from COPD, which I have now, he talked me into going back to school, you know, in my 40s. And I was terrified. I was afraid. But, you know, and I kept saying, by the time I finish these classes, I'm going to be 42. You know, I don't want to be going to school with kids and then finishing. What's going to happen at 42? He says, you're going to turn 42 anyway, so why don't you just go to school, you know? And my MO when I was using was I was a great starter and a terrible finisher. I could start anything, but I couldn't finish a thing. So in recovery, now I'm trying to finish a lot of stuff. And for example, I had one marriage, and Heidi mentioned this. We didn't have kids because of the lifestyle we lived. I didn't want to bring a child into that lifestyle, and I didn't see where things were going to be changing. And so she had, every time I got locked up, she had an abortion. She would have a DNC. Every single time, there was 5 of them that she had. So, and it was probably best because there was no change in sight for a long time. Now, I get in recovery, and I see the love of my life. And she's been the love of my life for 26 years. She just calls me her current husband. But you're a tough crowd. And but you know what? I've never done anything like that in my life of staying with one person, one relationship. And it's taught me about relationships in the program. Having a relationship with the sponsor. I have the same sponsor. I've had the same sponsor for 31 years. Been married for 26 years. I ended up getting a job with Ventura County, and I worked with them for 25 years. And it was a great job. And I'm retired now. Now they pay me. They pay me not to go to work. Who hasn't been looking for that their entire life? I was looking for that. Just give me some money, I'll be all right. Just pay me. Now they pay me not to go to work. I get a little pension, I get my Social Security, and it's great. I love it. I'm 69 years old. I'm going to be 70 here, my next birthday. You guys could do that math. You figured that part out, didn't you? 70 was after. Okay. And I retired from that after 25 years, been married 26 years. It's just amazing, you know, just absolutely amazing what can happen when you stick around here. My sponsor has worked me through the steps. I have a bunch of sponsees. I have a sponsor that's got a sponsor that's got a sponsor that's got a sponsor that's got a sponsor. And I love the fact that we're all doing this thing together, and it just doesn't get much better than that. When I was using, I didn't have many people that stuck around. There weren't many people that wanted me still around. And you probably look at me today and go, you know, it probably wasn't much of a dope fiend, but, you know, looks are deceiving these days. You don't know what anybody's going through. You don't know where anybody's been and what their life experiences are like. When I started my county job, you had to do a blood test. Now, I knew I had hepatitis at some point. I was all yellow and jaundice and the rest of that. And that was when I was 19. And so when I applied for this job with the county, you had to do all kinds of blood tests because you were going to be, you know, part of their program. And they would see if you had any pre-existing conditions so that insurance could, you know, exclude you or whatever. And they said, your test results are back. You've been infected with hepatitis A, B, and C. And I thought, well, heck, let's just go through the alphabet. And I really didn't think too much about it. But as years had gone on, I got sicker and sicker. There was nights where I would come down in the living room and I felt like my wife is going to find me on the floor dead. I mean, just tired, the aches and pains, the digestive stuff. It was pretty tough. So finally, I went on the interferon and did the injections once a week, took the pill, did that whole thing, and now I'm undetectable. And that's a good thing. As a matter of fact, which is cool, you know, and a lot of us in the program, we've got hepatitis, or we don't know if we haven't taken the test. And that was one of my jobs for the county, was going into jails and treatment programs and doing Hep C and HIV testing, doing alcohol and drug counseling. It was fantastic. I loved it. They gave me a county vehicle to drive around and go to these different facilities in the very county that used to arrest me for possession of paraphernalia, possession of drugs, 11-550, all that stuff, was now letting me to come in their facility with a bag of syringes so I could draw blood from the inmates. You know, go figure. I never thought that would happen. I didn't think that was going to be part of the plan, but that's what happened. And today I'm, you know, I'm pretty busy in my early stages of recovery. Like Heidi, I didn't know who my dad was. And I grew up with a stepfather, and I didn't know who my real dad was, and Mom kept lying to me about who it was. And I know she was protecting me, not that she's a bad person, we have a good relationship. Matter of fact, she lives about 6 blocks away, and I help her out. She's getting up there in years and pretty feeble, and her being close makes it nice, so I can go in there and help her do her bills and fix things and do all that stuff. I'm a caretaker today. I'm taking care of other people. They're trusting me with their checkbooks and their lives, and they're believing that I'm doing the right thing for the right reason. But back to my dad, I kept getting all these different stories. So when I got clean, I started doing research to find out who my dad was. And when I had about 3 years, I thought I had found my dad, and I called up Mom and I said, "Hey, I know where Dad lives. I'm going to go by and see him." She goes, "What? Who? What? No, don't do anything." And I'm going, "Wow, okay." She said, "I'm coming over. I want to talk to you." And she says, "That's not your real dad. Your real dad is so-and-so, and I can contact him for him." I said, "No, whoa, wait a second." Now, I'd done a lot of research. I had tracked down this name because on my birth certificate, I had this guy's last name. I had this name of this individual. And that's not my real dad. And then I have a stepdad who adopts me, and I get his last name growing up, which is crazy. And being in grammar school, and you go from Damon to Kirsch, and, you know, it's how come your name changes, you know, and all the paperwork and learning a new spelling and all the rest of that. Well, as time went on, my wife, God bless her, she's talked to my mom and found out where my dad lived. And as it turns out, the first house that Patty and I moved into was about 3 blocks away from where my dad lived. The same street where, at the opposite corner where our best friends lived and who we were always over there visiting them. Whenever I'd leave, I would drive down that street and I'd see this old guy in his garage. And I'd think to myself, that dude's pretty cool. I like him. Unknowing it was my father. You know, I didn't know it was my... I'm glad I didn't throw rocks at him or, you know, pull over and, you know, say shit and like we do when we're driving and stuff. Oh, well, that's a different story. So my wife made the arrangements for me to go and talk to my dad and meet him. And it was a great... We had a great relationship. It was just really short. And I wish it would have been longer. And it makes me sad that it wasn't longer. But just the same, I finally got to meet my real father. And his wife and him really opened their arms and allowed me to come by. Well, in that process of meeting my dad, I found out that I have a brother, a half-brother. Now, growing up, I had a half-sister, a stepbrother, a stepsister, and now I have another half-member, a half-brother. Well, he has autism, and his autism is crazy. My dad went without so that he would have a house when they passed away, and they did. They passed away 5 years ago and left the house and a trust so that I could take care of my brother. Now, autism is ugly. It's really ugly. My brother is socially inept. He cannot really talk to anybody. He doesn't like talking to people. He's musically inclined. He loves playing guitar, a steel guitar. He sings like nobody's business. He knows presidents, he remembers dates, he remembers people's names. I forget people's names and I go up to him and ask him and he'll tell me who they are. But he is, it's really hard to deal with the disease of autism. My brother, for example, when after Dad died, I'm cleaning up the house, I'm cleaning things out. And I'm trying to get things squared away in there, and they had a refrigerator, 2 refrigerators, a newer one in the garage and an old one in the kitchen. And it wasn't too good, and it was using a lot of electricity. And my brother was the only one living in the house, so we didn't need 2 refrigerators. And I said, "Why don't we take this new one that's in the garage and put it in and take the old one out?" And that was a big deal because it's change. Autism, they don't like any change. So I talked him into it. And what I had to do, he's not much help. He can't help sweep. He can't do a lot. He's got autism. I mean, it's so frustrating. He can't sweep. You know, when we mow the lawn, he can't even sweep the garage out or anything. So, to move the refrigerator, I had to open up the back patio door, open it up nice and wide. I had to move furniture so that I could get the refrigerator out of the kitchen, through the living room, out the patio door, and then out the back. and then open up the a gate on the side and then put it in the garage. So I do that. He's not helping at all. He gets in his room, shuts the door. He doesn't want to see any of this going on. It really troubles him. So I get out in the garage with the old refrigerator from the kitchen. I unstrap it from the dolly, and I put on the new refrigerator, get it all strapped in. It's a little bit bigger. It's heavy. I'm older. I'm older than him. I'm 60. Well, I wasn't 69 then, but after I was done with that refrigerator, I felt like I was. And so I get to the gate. I get it out of the garage, and I get the gate, and it's closed. I'm going, shit. So I got to put the refrigerator down, and I open up the gate. And I'm thinking, well, maybe the wind closed it or something. So I get the gate open. I get it through. I go to the patio door, and the patio door is closed. And the curtains are drawn. And I'm going, well, fuck me. What the hell's going on here? You know, last time I saw him, he was in his room. Excuse my language, but sometimes I do that. So I'm a work in progress. So we get the patio door open, and I get inside the living room, and guess what? The furniture's all moved back to where it originally belonged. And it was a chore just getting that refrigerator. But that's how he operates. He does not like change. Anything that we're going to do out of his norm, we have to pave the way. We have to let him know weeks in advance. We have to put it on the calendar so that he's all right with what's going on. Now, he lives three doors away, and that's one of the reasons we moved into the house that we're at, so that I could be closer to him and see what's going on and make sure he's all right and do the bills and food and so on, and the house is taken care of because he's in there by himself, and that's the way he likes it. But it's really a chore working with him and doing these things to get him squared away. And it takes its tolls. And I've told the story about him and how he does things. And people go, don't you just feel like shaking him? And I do. I feel like shaking him, but I don't. On the way up here, the poor guy hasn't had a TV since last night, like everybody else in Ventura, because we don't have cable. We don't have Wi-Fi. We don't have internet. And this guy loves his TV. It's a form of entertainment. It's a distraction. It's part of his routine, the shows that he watches. Well, he didn't say anything. And ours was out. And I was thinking, you know, he had an older service and maybe it was still working since I didn't hear anything. And on the way here, he called me and he started explaining to me what was wrong with his TV. He says, the bottom's okay. I can see stuff on the bottom. There's just no picture or sound. What should I do? You know, so I told him where I was and what was going on, explained it's going to be a process. The optic fiber was burnt or whatever. They can't even tell us what's going on. No one's getting any information, so the poor guy doesn't have any TV. And I'm up here now, and so he's going to go for a bike ride. That's his other form of entertainment. I'm not texting or doing Facebook. I'm trying to find out how much time I have. And I'm thinking maybe I should get into some recovery here, but I still go to a lot of meetings. I still go to 3 or 4 meetings a week. My grand sponsor says he still does the same things today after years of recovery that he did in his first 30 days. He still has a sponsor. He still works the steps. He still sponsors other people. He's of service. He answers his phone and he does all those things that we hear at meetings. And I still try and do that. My favorite service work these days is to go into Todd Road. It's a jail in Ventura County, and I go in once every 5 weeks. Not a big deal. They put us in a little room with a bunch of inmates and we get to talk to them about recovery. And we almost do that H&I panel like a meeting. We have our readings. We'll share, and we try to encourage them to share, or they could just sit there and listen, but they don't want that happening. They want them to get involved like a real meeting. You know how we can go to a meeting and not say a thing? And I really struggle with coming up here and doing this kind of thing and speaking in front of my peers, in front of people. It's hard for me to do that. But my great, great, great sponsor always says he hates it too. But those are the things that we need to do to stay in recovery. We need to let people hear our voice. We need to have people hear what's going on with us. And if you don't speak up and say your name, no one's going to know who you are. If you're coming in late and leaving early, no one's going to really know what's going on with you. It's 1 hour a day. My sponsor told me when I was putting money in the seventh tradition, he says, you're only putting a dollar or two in? I know you used more than that when you were using in a day. So try and put a little bit more in. And if the connection wants you there at a certain time, you would show up on time. So it's not that hard to stay in a meeting and listen and let people know and to share what's going on with you. I try and keep quiet in meetings so that maybe it'll give somebody an opportunity that's getting that energy to say something. I remember being in a meeting and sitting right next to my sponsor, and I thought, God, I haven't shared. I need to share. He's trying to encourage me to share. And it's a candlelight meeting, and I'm about ready to share, and he puts his hand on my leg, and he says, you need to share. Well, being a good addict, I clammed up. I wasn't, don't be telling me what to do. And I didn't share, not at that meeting. But it stayed with me. It stayed with me. And I remember that night, and that was a long time ago. I love Narcotics Anonymous. This program works if you give it a chance. And that's the deal. You got to give it a chance. You got to walk through those feelings. You got to tell somebody, tell you, get over it, and maybe throw out an F-bomb at you or whatever. And, get your little feelings hurt, and you'll get over it and do this deal. And we hope you don't go back out there and die. I don't know what else to share. I think I'm getting close. I'm getting tired of touching my phone and seeing what time it is. One of the things... I'm going to end with this. There's a man that was in Ventura that was real instrumental in getting meetings going. He got the first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous in Ventura on C Street. Him and a gentleman by the name of Eddie Cochran. They're both dead now. Great speakers. Fantastic people. But they got this meeting going on C Street. And Mike Moreno. And Mike used to always say, people think NA is a crutch. If NA is a crutch, give me two. Thanks for listening to me.